We move on to WrestleMania 26,
I
which
liked
I have
this
to
WrestleMania.
Say, all right, I didn't see this one. My stupid fantasy baseball league chose to have its draft that night, as it looks like they're going to do this year and screw me too. But you know what? You chodes aren't going to stop me. I think I'm going to order Mania on my laptop, and my partner and I will be watching that while we still beat your asses.
Hey,
I'm a multi-time champion of this league. I can be watching WrestleMania. I can chew gum and walk at the same time.
We should have you in our fantasy football league this year. We have a few spots that are going to open. Would you do that?
That would be tremendous.
We're going to fire the hipster contingent from the league.
I could always use
because they're cheap.
I could always use a new
because
challenge.
Because they're cheap. We're firing the small market teams because they can't compete.
I could always use a new challenge,
yes.
But... This one here...
I really, really liked this WrestleMania.
The build was better in a lot of ways. I guess we could start with a little bit of...
this is one where we could talk about several matches, I thought.
Yeah, well, we could start with a little continuity from the previous year. Undertaker-Michaels did end up being a rematch. They did it where Undertaker didn't want to deign to face Shawn Michaels again. He basically escalated a campaign to get his attention, culminating in... hitting him with a camera, yeah, in the Elimination Chamber. And that was, I thought they could have played this up a little more. Maybe this is me being Nelson nitpicker, but as far as how badly Shawn Michaels wanted the match, who benefited from the actions of Shawn Michaels against The Undertaker? Chris Jericho, who had the feud of 2008 with Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, that's true.
How badly Shawn Michaels wanted a piece of him.
Well,
I thought they could have played that
they
up.
They probably
a little
had forgotten. It was probably lost on them.
Sadly, it probably was. But
yeah, this was. And smartly, they had this close the show.
Yeah.
As in most rematches of epics, it's not as good as the original, but this one's close. I mean, it's most people would consider this one just a hair below the first.
Right.
I think this is a top 12 WrestleMania match of all time to show you where I've got the first one number 5. This one's like number 12, I think. I would say 4 3/4, 4.5.
Okay.
It's a wonderful match, and obviously it's the last match of Shawn Michaels' career.
Yeah.
You knew it was going to end. I mean, it wasn't – they did their best. I thought it was pretty cool.
Describe the finishing sequence, because it seemed to be a little bit of a callback to 2 years before when Shawn Michaels retired Ric Flair. There was some kind of thing at the end
where he didn't want – he grabbed them, and he's like he was just like, why won't you stay down? And he was just basically like, look, I'm ending your career right here. It was an overly dramatic tombstone, but it worked in this situation. I really liked this match. It was a hair, just because it was ironic that they threw the stip in.
Okay.
But I bought Michaels as having a better chance the year previous.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I was like most people where you knew Michaels was losing.
See, but I didn't think Michaels was ready to be all the way done yet.
Oh,
so
he wasn't.
He
was still performing at a high level, but just because...
But I mean that he personally, that's what I mean. Because for him to say, you know what, guys, I've had enough, write me into a match where I'm going to, you know, I didn't think he personally was ready to let go.
I think it's better to go out like that than, like, say, a Ric Flair where it's like, come on, buddy.
Good God. I mean, if you're going to compare him to Flair, yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. So that was a tremendous one. It's funny because from the tail end of the previous mini episode here, number 8 in the series, the two names we've been mentioning together throughout this as being the biggest stars of the era, Leviathan and Prototype.
You know him as Batista and Cena.
Yeah. They did finally face off here, and this was the end of the Batista era at WrestleMania, at least for the foreseeable future, because he would end up leaving the company in the next couple of months here. They faced off. It was a pretty good feud between them. Nah, because there was like another 2 months. They faced off like 2 more times. Well, the next one at...
I don't remember the exact date there.
They did the thing at... they might not have had closed circuit where you were at the time, but the way they did it at Extreme Rules, it was a last man standing match, and they had Cena do it. The way that he won the match... Batista, like, he had him down, and Batista's feet were, like, by the ring post. So Cena, like, jumped up, grabbed a roll of duct tape.
Savage crush finish.
Yeah, and did that and won that way. And then they did one more match where he put him through the grate on the floor with the whole, you know, worked thingy there. But anyways, they had faced off at SummerSlam 08 and kind of a throwaway match, which was disappointing, but
For it would have been so much. It's one of those things that
it would have been a lot.
Not
more.
A lot of people remembered, but enough did that it.
Yeah.
Somewhat. It would have been so great for this to be for them to hype this as their yeah. first match. But it was good. It was two big. Like I said, it was the two biggest stars kind yeah. of this as far as new stars that were created right. of this period wrestling, and you knew Cena would go over and
Batista
it was
had
good.
Just yeah Batista
it was like a 4-star match.
Right, Batista had gone through this vicious heel turn the previous autumn. Taking
and
out Rey Mysterio,
it was
yeah.
good. Batista was very good as a
heel. He was good in that
run.
Role, yeah. And it
he also dressed very well during this role.
I was just about to mention that. I liked it, and it was like what was great.
Nothing was,
more
awkward than Dave Meltzer like complimenting the way he dressed, and Batista having no idea how to respond.
Yeah, but it was like that's what was great because he was going for some kind of eclectic. I'm not going to quite say hipster kind of a
no,
thing.
No. I'm total opposite hipster.
Right,
it was
right.
like club guy. Kind of.
Yeah, kind of like club guy. I guess that's the clue. But it was like, it definitely wasn't cookie cutter. And it was like, he came out and it was like, you didn't have guys dressing like that on TV. Like now today, everybody's ripping off Chris Jericho's thing, and not to play into his own storyline, but the heel and the suit.
Yeah.
His look was, it was great. Most and this is the thing. This is how you know he's a company favorite. Most guys can't get away with that. Mm-hmm. Most guys have to look more cookie cutter than he did in that
yeah,
era.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a nice
touch. It was very good. I thought he did a very good job.
You
here.
And I are fans of the subtle touches that just, you know, add to it.
Yeah,
and
he had the Lacoste T-shirts and stuff
yeah.
like that. Yeah, he was like, it was like a Jersey Shore type thing.
Kind
almost.
Of, yeah.
Yeah,
it was
like,
just really good.
Yeah, Batista, yeah, he kind of.
Only 13:31, shorter than I might have thought it would have
well,
been.
Well, I
but
mean,
he beat
you
him.
Know, I mean, you're not going to do a 60-minute Iron Man with these two.
Right, beat him by submission with the STF. Chris Jericho in the other world title match for the World Heavyweight Championship in 1548 shockingly defeated Edge because
this
was a revenge storyline.
Yeah, this seemed like one of those things that they just did it to screw with people.
Yeah.
Well, I remember didn't Edge then go on to
like a heel turn shortly thereafter because it was
out
of frustration.
You know what, did he actually he didn't win it, though, didn't because
no.
they did something with Jack Swagger. Like.
Well, here's what it was, because Swagger would win Money in the Bank here. Swagger cashed in, like, Edge laid out Jericho on the next SmackDown. Swagger came in, took out Jericho. I think it's the only heel-over-heel Money in the Bank thing that there's ever
Does
been.
Does anyone remember that Jack Swagger had a cup of coffee? You talk
no,
about just
desk. No.
That was, I was just like, whoa.
But that's a
Whoa, that too quick to elevate him?
But it was very damaging. That it did. He'd already been the ECW champ, but he was not ready for this.
No,
but,
he was not.
But here's the thing, though.
He's just not that good.
Edge, quote-unquote, got his heat back because he had a cage match with Jericho at Extreme Rules, but Jericho no longer had the title. So it really...
I didn't like
it.
Swagger
took the
winning.
Steam out
yeah.
of Edge's return.
I thought, yeah. Edge
had been hurt the previous summer. They were tag team champions. Jericho then went around bad-mouthing him.
It was a very natural thing to do,
yeah.
and they actually did it. And then they kind of...
And Edge won the Rumble.
Yeah, it was basically a copy of the Cena Rumble from 2 years previous.
Yeah.
Where Edge was a surprise and came out
right.
towards the end and won it.
Only in this case, he wasn't going up against the guy who injured him, but he was going up against the guy who badmouthed him, called him a loser in his absence, etc., and essentially turned him face by doing that.
Yeah, yeah, and Edge hadn't been a face in a long time. He had
right.
been a heel ever since the Lita thing. I mean, he'd
right.
been a heel for 5 years and a damn good one at that.
Right.
And yeah, I thought he should... Wrestling 101 says he just goes over. Don't
right.
don't outsmart yourself.
Yeah, yeah. They tried to outsmart the room on this one here. The only other things worth mentioning here, in terms of like the top stars of the era, it is worth mentioning. This was not long after the Randy Orton face turn. He ended up defeating Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase in a triple threat match. It was basically the legacy implosion match. What was interesting was they started this with Randy Orton being the abusive, quote-unquote, mentor towards these guys, seemingly building towards a face turn for one or both of them. Somewhere along the way, they flipped the jib, and it was a thing of, like, we're going to use this. We're going to treat these two punks as being so obnoxious that Randy Orton will be justified in turning on them and
it was
would
also,
make a better face.
It was also one of those things where the crowd, I think, just in the
– yeah.
It's just this era of wrestling where the crowd is just pulling for the star.
Right.
And that's what they went with. I mean,
right. And Orton was a pretty hot heel, especially going back to the previous year's match against
yeah.
Triple H.
And Cody Rhodes is very good, but DiBiase kind of is mediocre at
right.
best.
Right. It's one of the other big names of the era, too. It's worth mentioning. And this is somewhat of a change of the guard type matchup because – Triple H is somewhere in the eclipse of his career at this present time. This was one of the least important matches he ever had at Mania, but it is with a guy who is part of their next crop of stars here. He defeated Sheamus in 1209.
And how appropriate that he wins.
In a grudge match, yeah. But you know, then Sheamus did the thing the next month, putting him out for a period of time. But it's a thing where, again, Sheamus...
And then
you know,
Triple H came back and buried him again.
Yeah, that's true. But Sheamus, Triple H's real-life good buddy slash bag carrier, much like... You know, with Orton and Batista previously, why Triple H chose to work with him. But so it's notable in a historical sense.
When he said bag carry, I thought you were going to talk about Ron Simmons and, you know,
Harley Race.
Yes.
Which I should have asked Harley Race about that in the time we had with him recently on the program.
Whatever happened to Clash 19?
The only other thing worth mentioning here, I believe, the return of Bret Hart. They brought him back.
This is definitely worth mentioning.
In the infamous January 4th, 2010 Raw. That he was on. Interestingly, that almost 2 months to the day, Bret Hart made the first of his two appearances in the FDH Lounge and totally had a poker face. And yeah, I don't think I'll ever go back or whatever. The ink was probably, you know, not even
good.
Still wet on the contract.
Good. No offense to you, Ricky, but that's the way he should do it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't say that in a. I'm not mad, but I'm just kind of giggling about it a little bit, I guess.
Yes.
You know, I got worked like everybody else in the business does. But
like Jake Digman did in the elevator.
Yes, like Jake Digman did, yes. Yeah, by Jimmy Jacobs' faux tears that night.
Yeah.
Go check out, I think it's mini episode 21 of The Lounge, folks, where we expound on this. Somewhere in nearly 20. I think it's 21. But Bret Hart came back. It was a deal where he was going to have a grudge match with Mr. McMahon.
Such an organic feud.
Yeah.
It was a great move on paper. It's something they'd want that... You know, internally, they obviously probably wanted to do for a very long time,
right.
Which is the question of bringing Bret back.
Because Bret, let us remember, and let us go back to, you know, the SNS coverage of WrestleMania 22. Bret took some baby steps back. He had done the DVD. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame that year. But in 2006, Bret was still uncomfortable enough that he didn't even want to appear at WrestleMania for the traditional... You know, wave at the crowd and smile at the crowd.
Which in retrospect kind of seems petty and silly.
Well, in retrospect, yeah. The fact that he would go back and work an actual thing a couple of years later. And again, the only thing about Bret, and this is where I have a little bit of a question. And I guess I'll call it agree to disagree with guys like Bret Hart and Mick Foley and whatever, is when they do stuff and it's like, when they're like, I'm different than everybody else in the business because I'll never do this. I'll never sell out by doing this. I'll never, in Mick Foley's case, I'll never come back after I've retired.
Yeah.
In Bret Hart's case, I'll never cheapen this by making it into an angle. Don't say you're never going to do something and then turn around and do it.
Or just don't be so, yeah. I mean, people could change their mind.
Right, right.
But, you know, don't be so.
But don't paint yourself into a corner. He painted himself into a corner.
But he should have done that. This was something that should have been done. Now, that being said, it fell flat.
Yeah, it did. It was a deal where the Harts were at ringside, and it was a deal where supposedly they were all in Mr. McMahon's pocket, then they turned on him. The part about that was kind of funny is that...
I thought that was so unnecessary and excessive. I didn't know why they did that.
You know what? And this might... Rarely are they too smart for the room. This might have been one of the times. Because to the smart fans... The Harts are like the most dysfunctional friggin' bunch of I hate you, you hate me, blah, 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 blah type
thought,
family.
To me, it just...
And a lot of them do envy Bret for being the most successful
yeah,
one.
Yeah, but to me it just reeked of the family wanting to get on the show. I thought it was...
And Bruce was the special referee, figures that he...
Yeah. Figures well, that he... I thought that whole family involvement of the truck was so unnecessary. And just,
right.
And it was just... It was one of those things that... It was done properly with Bret just completely kicking his ass, but the live crowd was just, I don't know if it went on too long or what, if it was just like the result was so inevitable.
Right.
It didn't work. It was. I remember that being the major disappointment of this show.
It didn't. And actually,
like the Triple H Orton thing of a few years previous, of the year previous.
Right.
It was one of those deals where you got less and... It started out at a very high level, obviously.
Right.
Montreal screw job, everyone knew about it. They did a very good job when Bret, the night Bret came back. There's a lot of heat, a lot of interest. But as you got closer to the event, you just cared less and less. You know, it was funny to the point where, you know, I cared more about a Cena Batista or a Michaels Taker a lot more than this. And this should have been like one of the biggest things ever. And most people forget about this just 2 years later.
The one thing, the one purpose that it did serve, and this was really good, and I wish it hadn't been fleeting, but the Hart Dynasty actually got a good run out of this thing here. They ended up becoming they ended up winning the tag pennies in the next month or so here and getting a good run.
Yeah,
and
how long did that last?
Yeah, true. They got buried and then broken up. I do actually see one other thing we should talk about as we're getting closer to the present day and historical significance, because he's now one of the biggest stars in the company and a headliner this year. CM Punk in his first singles match at WrestleMania after being in Money in the Bank the couple of previous years.
And winning it 2 years in a row.
Yes, winning it 2 years in a row. I was surprised when we were looking at this at 07. I'd forgotten he was in it in 07. So he was actually in it 3 years in a row. In this one, he ends up getting a relatively high-profile match against Rey Mysterio. CM Punk had the Straight Edge Society at the time with Luke Gallows and Serena. Had he won, Mysterio would have had to have joined. Mysterio defeated him in a criminally short 6:30.
Yeah, I remember this was way too short, and this was obviously, this is when Punk did the storyline I think a lot of people would have hoped he had done, he was going to do earlier, where what he had done in Ring of Honor, in his that heel run he had initially against Raven, that phenomenal, that's about as good of an indie feud as there's ever been.
I just always thought, though, that this was an awkward gimmick for the PG era, because what are you going to have a fan or have a fan favorite come out there? No, you know what? I want to smoke my dope, man. Yeah, that would have gotten over during the Attitude Era.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Wrong
to
place,
me, it was one of those
time.
Things that, like, you know, 4 or 5 years earlier against like an RVD, that'd go well.
Keep in mind, Kurt Angle with the self-righteousness and how it got over. And Kurt Angle at one point was bragging about being a virgin, and it really got him over as a heel.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Steve Austin, you know, obviously would have been the dream scenario.
Yeah,
to this day, that's always talked about as a match that they, but, you know.
Yeah, so aside from the awkwardness of that and the shortness of the match, it was noteworthy in that way. That takes us up to
last year.
WrestleMania 27 last year. Which
I think was a dud.
I do, too.
I've never seen a wrestling with so much filler. Like, there weren't a lot of matches, and it seemed like none of them really got the time.
Well, there's not going to be that many this year either.
Except the Triple H Undertaker. And to me, you can pretty much just... This bleeds into this year's. I think we can almost connect them, because the top two matches on this show lead into this year's. You have
they do.
Triple H Undertaker
had
the great match, and it was great. They were given, you know, of course, because of who they are, they were given some liberties that, you know.
No holds barred match.
That the mid-card, the other mid-card guys don't get. Well, they're not mid-card, but, you know, mid-card guys don't get. Like a Cody Rhodes. I mean, can you imagine if, like, you know, an up-and-comer was given some of these parameters?
Right.
You know, I mean, remember they did a chair shot to the head in this match. They got, now they did get fined.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, if somebody else does it, they're probably getting a little more than getting fined.
Triple H had to pay into the company coffers. The punchline writes itself.
Yeah. But it was very good. It was top 12, top 13.
Yeah.
I thought, as far as Undertaker matches go the last 3 years, I think it's been a very, very subtle decrease, but they've all been very good. The Undertaker, who had this great streak but no really good matches, the last 3 years, he's had a match of the year candidate each time.
Yeah.
So hats off to him.
And this could well be four, being with the atmosphere of Hell in a Cell.
Yeah. They're going to have to
bust. They're competing against the ghosts of what they've done before, but by the same token,
here's the thing, man.
What's available to you
they
can
got,
elevate
they got,
it.
They have got, yeah, but here's the issue I got. They have to violate the PG rules for this.
And they might.
Because it's end of an era. They're talking about an old era. There needs to be blood.
Yeah.
I don't care about these Chris Nowinski reports. These two guys are fine. I want.
Don't say sure. No. I don't want that. I mean, I'm not even necessarily.
There needs to be a level of violence in this match. There needs to be a level of violence that they don't do anymore.
You can do chair shots to the back or whatever. I'm not even necessarily the biggest fan of either one of these guys, but I don't want to see them be vegetables. I believe the Nowitzki stuff. I don't want that.
I'm saying I do too, but I'm saying these guys are not regular participants. Where I agree where what it was, it's sustained. I don't think there's been an instance in wrestling history where you that chair shot. Now, Benoit took some terrible ones.
How about like one of those foil pie pans that would make a loud noise? I'll settle for that to the head.
Yeah, to me, they need to go back to a level of violence they don't do for this. Otherwise, I think it's going to be a disappointment.
And
Michaels is the ref now, too, to up the ante.
Here's the interesting thing. We're going to talk about this for at least two of the matches here in terms of last year and this year being joined together like few WrestleManias ever. You almost have to go back to maybe four and five.
Yeah,
that's the first one that comes to mind. Because let's start with this match, with the finish of it. Because let us remember, Triple H dominated the offense in this match.
Do you know what was odd? Is that they make it believe that that this wasn't, like, always on the books. I always thought that, like, remember Triple H came out the next night after this match and basically, I know you'll be back and I'll be waiting for you.
Yeah.
Right then and there, I'm like, okay, I already know the top two matches at next year's WrestleMania. And it's going to be Cena Rock and Triple H Undertaker. And they made it seem like they were waffling. I can't think. I mean, they did that the way last year's match was booked, and I'm fine with this. I like when they do long-term booking.
Right.
Was clearly designed to do a rematch.
Yeah.
As soon as this match was over and they did the Undertaker, my God, I've never seen the Undertaker beaten like this before.
Undertaker was carried out and was portrayed as a complete fluke that he managed to get Triple H in the triangle chokehold at the very end when he was about to smash him with a sledgehammer.
I liked the way it was booked, but it was clearly designed to book to a rematch for this year.
Yeah, that was. And then the main event, which is one of the crappiest main events, worst matches to end a show in a long, long time. And look, hey, the Miz.
It doesn't speak well to the Miz.
The Miz is a Cleveland guy. I like the Miz a lot. I still think he's got a great run as a face in front of him at some point. I'm not going to put all of this on him. He did suffer concussion late in the going here. The booking was bad. Here's the problem with this. This was booked, and when they interjected The Rock in it as guest host last year, while the match wasn't a triple threat for the title, personality-wise, it was booked as a triple threat.
Yeah, people just wanted to. The main draw here was not a world title match. It was what is The Rock going to do?
Right.
Any cost scene of the match. Look, I totally agreed with the Miz getting the championship last year, but he wasn't booked particularly well. And this is one of those things that I fear in a couple of years, people are going to make the freaking Miz main event at WrestleMania.
Well, that's their own damn fault because they've booked him into oblivion over the last year. Don't give the guy the rub that goes along with a win like this and then just defecate on him.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Granted, he should have caught a guy when he didn't come out of the ring here. Are we going to do that? Are we going to blame him for the Survivor Series buy rate because, you know, it didn't get over because they couldn't get any heat on Cena on The Rock leading up to it anyway? So, no, it's ridiculous. Bad booking. There was bad booking around this match.
Yeah, I this is a bad WrestleMania. I think this one in 25 were the only WrestleManias in the 20s.
Right.
Certainly the only ones in this particular podcast, and obviously I liked 2021 a lot. So, yeah, going all the way back to WrestleMania.
Right.
These were the only two subpar ones.
Right, and this is a thing where, and it was supposed to end by, and this is what was so screwy, it was supposed to end as a double countout when they were outside the ring there, or maybe that was an impromptu thing with the double countout because of Miz and the concussion, and they went through the barrier and weren't supposed to. But anyways, Rock restarts the match. Gives Cena the Rock bottom. The Miz pins him in total cheap fashion.
And again, logistically, it's a nightmare because you have The Rock, who's supposed to be this big baby face, you know,
allowed the big heel to win.
Yeah, and you know, he's this conquering baby face. Oh, he's going to bring back the era. And, you know, The Miz, who certainly, I mean, you know, if you take into account that The Rock is supposed to be the flag bearer for these disenchanted attitude era fans who don't like John Cena, those same people aren't fans of The Miz. So it was logistically one of those things, again, like you said, you'd probably have to go back to WrestleMania 4 and 5 where they knew what the main event at next year's WrestleMania would be.
Right.
But they didn't do a good enough. Cena had unlike WrestleMania 4, where they did need to establish Randy Savage, they didn't need to establish John Cena here. I guess they just needed to establish friction, but that friction was already kind of there.
Right.
So it's not as clean, but at least they were thinking.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. And the way that it went down, I'm going to posit something here you may or may not agree with, but this crowd in the Georgia Dome last year, the reaction after the match, and I know you're saying that it wasn't necessarily a pro-Miz crowd, but you were starting to see a little bit of that. We talk about that at the time. people cheering for the booking.
Yeah,
they were trying very hard to push Miz as being a legitimate guy.
Not doing that. Well, the thing is, he wasn't booked well, though, I don't think.
But here's the thing. This is what I want to posit and see if you agree with this. The Miz, if we're just going by crowd reaction after the match, the Miz winning this match got more of a babyface reaction than the aforementioned John Cena over Triple H at WrestleMania 22. There were more people cheering
again,
and cheering wildly for this.
Again, I think it's more of anti-Cena.
Okay.
Than pro-Miz. I mean, look at the Miz now.
Yeah, you might be
well,
right.
Look, to me, yeah, they haven't done the Miz any favors since this match.
Right.
But he's also very limited.
That's true.
You know, when you do it, you know, I remember in the SNS days saying the Miz could be their next honky-tonk man. I thought they should have actually pushed him when everyone really, really hated him and had no respect for him whatsoever. But the problem is when you do that and push a guy, what happened to the honky-tonk man after he lost? He just returned jobs to everybody. And I'm not saying the Miz is – he had advanced past the level of a honky-tonk man. Obviously, he got a world title run instead of an intercontinental title run. I'm not saying what's happened to him recently in particular is fair. But there was only one way to go.
Right.
You know?
Well, by the way, too, and people can find us on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheFDHLounge, an appearance on the show of the great Dave Meltzer leading up to last year's WrestleMania. And we were talking about that with The Miz, and he was talking about, you know, it's just there's something that's just not quite there with him, whatever. And I said, Dave, it seems to me it's a thing where the company just is married to the whole paradigm of the chicken-ass heel. You got the heel can only win by cheating, whatever, and Meltzer was like, you're right about that. The problem is that's got a mid-card ceiling on it, and this guy needs to be booked stronger.
Like I said,
yeah.
The honky-tonk
yes,
man. The
yes.
Miz.
I think Meltzer would have completely agreed with your comparison.
Yeah, I mean, he's got that star that he brings from the outside, you know, obviously being on MTV, that he did have enough star quality to get beyond the mid-card level.
He's got a lot of natural charisma to him. He's improved as a worker.
Yeah.
He's not the biggest guy, but they've all shrunk.
I just don't know if history's going to shine very brightly on his appearance in the last match here. I think he's going to be kind of an afterthought in the whole Rock Cena storyline.
He may be. He was just there. They're trying to interject him at the last minute into this year's one.
And they'd be better served not doing that.
Yeah, they should just put him in the Teddy versus Johnny match. But
awful.
The match that had the most heat last year going into WrestleMania, and what an indictment of the way that they book their own talent. The match that had the most heat by far did not involve two present full-time wrestlers. It involved the two present full-time announcers, Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler. There was molten heat for this one.
Again, though, it was one of those things like
in the
we've
months
seen,
to come, they beat it into the ground.
Yeah, it was one of those things that we saw, you know, with some of the, you know, the Brett Vince or the Triple H Orton, that law of diminishing returns.
Yeah,
and then it was one of those. It was compounded with just the bonehead decision to have Cole get the win.
Reverse decision by the anonymous Raw general manager who, by the way, whatever happened to him? What was the resolution of that storyline, Kyle?
That's bad.
Yeah.
That's bad.
You know what?
That's bad.
You know what's hilarious?
That's bad. And, you know, no one talks about that. They went on that whole thing and that, look.
Dude, how much will you pop if at the end of Teddy Johnny, that would be awesome. Wouldn't that be the spot to bring it back?
Yes, and it would be, and I'm glad that we're transitioning with it with the announcers. Yeah. No one, by and large, gives a damn about that. Like, I hate this Teddy Long Jean Laurinaitis feud,
right?
Because the whole general manager gimmick is so dead. People don't care. It doesn't draw any money. Just whatever happened to the days of a guy like, it just takes away
right
from time.
By the same token, it's so obvious who needs to go over. Because I'll tell you what, regardless of how this whole thing started, John Laurinaitis basically playing himself as the clueless, douchebag corporate lackey is a great character. Totally needs to go over. We need more of Laurinaitis and Otunga. By far, we need that.
Yeah, I have, for the life of me, never understood how Teddy Long has stayed general manager of SmackDown this long.
Well, here's the thing. I hope they find something still to do with him.
Yeah.
He's a good on-camera presence.
Well, I don't know about that.
He's entertaining, anyways.
He is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, if you're making a best of 10 long DVD, how long is that lasting?
You got to remember, I'm an old school NWA guy.
I thought he kind of wasn't that good then either.
With the do-rag managing Doom, I don't know. But by the way,
WCW's version of black people. That's,
well,
okay.
By the way, if you're wondering what WCW's policy on the juice was back in the day. Keep in mind how big he looked standing next to Ron Simmons and Butch Reed.
Yeah.
That'll tell you all you need to know. But now this match here, again, over Bookamania by having the reverse decision here because Lawler wouldn't release the hold on him. Jack Swagger was in Michael Cole's corner. It involved the demolition of the coal mine, which was well overdue. It did lead to JR coming out and calling the rest of the card, which, by the way, too, all due respect to JR, it's kind of the same thing as The Rock. We sit here and romanticize because Michael Cole is just the drizzling shiznits as an announcer. Do we forget how much around 04, 05, 06, there was some... I know I was feeling the JR fatigue and some other people were too because I realized it's his job. And I know the little guy used to talk about how he would get across like the storylines in the Evolution days. If you're going to sit here and try and sell something like that as being as great as something in the Attitude Era, I'm sorry. That's the boy that cried wolf. JR might have been, but the fact that JR didn't have a lower level on his hype meter, I
think that was a disinterested person. I think he kind of been beaten out. You don't know because of his relationship with the. You gotta just get into his head, and
right.
Only he can his right. Very tumultuous relationship with Vince McMahon.
Right.
That. You know, he's had the rug jerked out from under him so many times.
Right.
You know, what am I supposed to do?
Right.
I would still take Jim Ross. Calling a major show over Michael Cole any day of the week.
I would too. But I think we over romanticize him just because everybody else sucks. I mean, JR was at his best in the Attitude Era, I would say, and maybe the old school NWA.
Here's the thing: he can be both because he was two very different.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It was good old JR and.
Do respect JR. I think your fastball is more like 92 when it used to be 95. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, I mean, well, he's like anybody. I mean,
right.
You have a peak for a reason.
Right.
Because it's
and we don't
a,
think
you can't sustain a high
like
level.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Michael Cole, again, it's not always his fault that he's bad. I mean, the way having a heel lead announcer is logistically not smart.
I thought over the course of and bridging from last year to this year, I thought had they put Michael Cole together with, like, Vicky and done, like, an Uber stable.
Michael Cole, should be a manager.
Right.
Because he can get heat.
But like some kind of coalition with Vicky, who's also
coalition
a
coalition, too. They could
yes,
do
yes. Coalition. Yes, yes. It writes itself.
Yes.
It writes itself. All right, the other things here that we didn't hit yet, again, historical significance, two big stars who've only gotten bigger. Randy Orton defeated CM Punk. This was the waning days of the CM Punk heel run. This year he wasn't saddled with the Straight Edge Society. This year he was saddled by the New Nexus. What was left of that drizzling crap run there.
Thank God he just broke free of that and just did his own thing. I mean,
in 1448...
I was so mad he lost. That pissed me off, too.
The match sucked because... And how often do you say that about a CM Punk match? Because everything was built around... They did a thing of where he hit Orton like in the leg with a screwdriver or something to set it up. So the match was basically a hobbled in the storyline, Randy Orton pursuing him for a whole match. I want to see Randy Orton and CM Punk without the storyline impediments.
Yeah, Orton's not great, but...
He could be carried to a great match easily.
Yeah, I remember just being really irritated that Punk lost. And
right.
It's kind of funny, looking back the last couple of years, this Randy Orton's kind of been... lost in the shuffle the last three WrestleManias now, you know. A match against the Legacy Implosion.
Right.
This was, you know, mid-card for...
Question of his health this year. That's why I got in with Kane. I think they didn't want to put him in anything where if there was any kind of a question where they'd have to take him out.
Yeah, because what's funny
I would
much rather have seen Daniel Bryan versus Randy Orton. That'd be a lot more intriguing as a step-up match than Daniel Bryan versus Sheamus.
Except it might be more of a foregone conclusion about Daniel Bryan losing, just because it's almost impossible to imagine Randy Orton not getting that win at WrestleMania.
But, well, I would certainly put my two cents in and tell them otherwise.
Well, that would be very interesting. I'd love to be in that booking meeting.
I would be thrown out very quickly. I would need you to drive me home.
I had an inside joke I was going to make there, and I'll think better of it.
Thank you very much.
A celebrity, the token celebrity participation last year, John Morrison, Trish Stratus, and Snooki defeated Dolph Ziggler and Way Cool with Vicky Guerrero. The big high spot here in this match, Snooki ends up hitting like a handspring.
I'll give it to her for as much crap as she takes, as a person or whatever.
Right.
I mean, I don't know the woman well or at all. I thought she was, like, okay.
I didn't think somebody as round as her could move like that. Props to her. I mean,
you know what I would do? You know what I'm going to say right now?
Are you the father, Kyle Ross?
No. Okay. I would do Snooki, though. Most people always, like, act like I'm, like, saying things, like, you know, bizarre. Like, really? I mean, you wouldn't. I mean, come on.
Given enough beer or perhaps other substances in your case, yeah. I mean, it's, you're not saying you do it sober, so that's fine. And what would be more appropriate than having drunk sex with Snooki?
Yes.
I don't think there's anything right about having sober sex with her. But anyways, this match, the best part about this was the inside thing of afterwards. The cold shoulder.
Yeah.
Trish Stratus goes to, like, high-five John Morrison, who was pissed because Melina didn't get the spot.
Oh, who cares?
By the end of the year, John Morrison and Melina were both out of the company.
Yeah, who cares? Melina, yeah. You know what, John? You should have been giving Melina the cold shoulder years ago, and she was humping Batista, you moron. Back to the indies for you, pal.
And humping Mike Knox. Allegedly. Have you seen, kids, go look this up on YouTube. There is a great shoot on there from Val Venus. Have you seen his shoot on John Morrison? You can't make a hoe into a housewife. Oh, my God. Val Venus just is in rare form on that. Well, because he's good friends with Trish Stratus. So he's like, I'm going to say all the things my girl Trish couldn't say about you, John Morrison. Beautiful stuff.
I like Val Venus.
Yeah, exactly. The second match on the show, I'll mention this before we get to the opener, which will probably be the last one we need to talk about. I'll just mention this for historical perspective. Rey Mysterio has been one of the big stars of the last 10 years. Cody Rhodes is probably going to be one of the big stars of the next 10 years. They faced off in a singles match. You talk about matches that had the right outcome. Rey Mysterio put over Cody Rhodes.
Yes, and no Rey this year, huh?
No. I injured again.
His knees are destroyed. He shouldn't wrestle anymore. What does he have left to prove?
He may have one limited run, but
I don't think a run like it.
I want to see him, and I was trying to think of the name. God, out of sight, out of mind.
Sin Cara.
So, yeah, I kept thinking Mystico. Mystico. I want to see him in that because that could be like a passing of the guard, man.
Yeah, I think that would be fine. But
yeah.
Look, man, that was 16 years ago. He was having those legendary cruiserweight matches in WCW.
I agree.
I mean, there's no point to wrestle anymore.
I agree.
16 years after the fact.
Well, in terms of guys hanging it up, the opener, we didn't know it at the time. Shocking finish. I mean, shocking finish and shocking what we would find out afterwards. And I don't remember how much the medical news played into it. I don't know if ADR was ever set to go over. Alberto Del Rio was getting the monster push. He won the Royal Rumble. Again, a lot of the heat was on him, so you wouldn't necessarily expect a heel to win with as much heat on him. But in 11-10, Edge with Christian in his corner defeated Alberto Del Rio with Ricardo Rodriguez and Brodus Clay in a single match for the World Heavyweight Championship. Notable because for the first time, a world title or WWE title match opened WrestleMania. A lot of people thought that was a shot at those guys. Or disrespect to the title.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Jim Ross has been blogging that he'd like to see Punk and Jericho go on first this year because the reason being they won't get their time cut then.
Right.
And that's what they might have done here. If you're going to cut time, you'll let the opener do what it needs to do, but once you're, starting to get to that Triple H Undertaker time, hey, we got to cut somebody's time.
Right.
So.
And there is something to be said for the notion that this is the all-star night of the year when everything on the card is here for a reason.
Yeah.
There's not as much, stigma.
And I'll say this, though. It's again, another reason why there shouldn't be two world title matches.
I would agree with that. Edge would end up vacating the belt shortly thereafter.
And he's going into the Hall of Fame this year.
He's going into the Hall of Fame this year, yeah. And as we set up for this year, we've talked about most of the things that are going to be on the build for this year. We talked about Rock Cena and how that came to be, Triple H and Undertaker with the setup for it again. We touched on, all right, Randy Orton and Kane, which, again, it was a last-minute program for Orton because they didn't know his availability. CM Punk working a best-in-the-world storyline against a returning Chris Jericho. CM Punk has the WWE Championship.
It's a little flat, I think.
It kind
compared
of
to the other two, just because the other two are just the builds are so good.
Are you one of the people who questions the interjection of the personal stuff into – does that dilute –
I thought it was good.
But here's the thing. If it's best in the world, best in the world, best in the world, oh, and your dad's a drug addict. I mean, that those are like different directions. Is that not contradictory? Am I being Nelson nitpicker to say?
A little. I mean, I think it might – I don't know if that came from the guys where they felt maybe, okay, the best in the world thing isn't work. We need a little more to do. See, okay. I always – see, I – once again, though, I think you and I agree. The whole best in the world thing,
yeah.
First of all, people don't – I think they kind of almost need to get away with that because you're talking about a match that's going to be third from the top.
Yeah, but
and I don't like the whole best.
But this is the title that means the most in the company, and people know that. So there is.
Yeah,
that.
But this is going to come across as such the third biggest match on the card.
Oh, clearly.
So to say the winner of this is the best in the world, while I feel that CM Punk could make a legitimate claim to that crown as far as the touring regulars go.
That's true. Chris Jericho's been out the last year and a half. Yeah.
That. I don't know. I thought the stuff was good. I thought Jericho's promos were good. I really liked them a lot.
Maybe I'm putting two and two together here now. Maybe they switched focus to the personal stuff because maybe CM Punk realized after saying, "I've been swimming with the sharks while you've been dancing with the stars." Boy, he really kind of cut the feet out from underneath Jericho with that one, didn't he? Because like, if Jericho's the best in the world, where has he been? You know, that's.
Well, no, I mean, the guy just came back and said he didn't have anything. I didn't think. I thought that was a good line.
Okay, all right.
I had no issue with that.
All right, maybe.
I thought that was a very good line.
It was a very good line, but that's something for which Jericho has no answer, and you don't want to have anything where the one side has nothing to answer for.
I'd be like, well, I mean, he could say, look, how about the 7 years that came before that, pal?
Okay,
I didn't have anything left to prove.
That's true. He was mostly upper mid card in those 7 years.
Yeah, I know.
So,
that's again, that's the problem with doing the best in the world. I've never considered Chris Jericho the best in the world.
There are some that, as an in-ring performer, there are some that would have said like 2008 when he was in there with Michaels. And you don't think so? You're not one of those?
He's good. Chris Jericho, I've always thought, is a better character than a worker. I always thought he was slightly...
True, but he's a first ballot Hall of Fame character, so...
Yes, but I've always thought that he was, as far as the workers who broke through from the old WCW and came to WWE, I thought he was not nearly as talented in the ring as Benoit or Guerrero.
Well, I would agree with that, but there's no shame in that necessarily.
No, I'm not saying he should be ashamed, and
he's not
good. I mean, he's an A-minus level worker,
right.
But I mean.
Well, the funny thing is, the other match, while it doesn't have a whole lot of heat on it and everything like that, and really should, the other world title match, when you're talking about guys who are best in the world, one of the two guys in this match could be forgiven for sticking his hand in the air and saying, hey, fellas, what about me? Daniel Bryan, the world heavyweight champion.
God,
yeah,
he's good. It's to the point where I'll probably get pissed if he loses here.
Yeah.
Because he just doesn't deserve. He's just so – I'm sorry. I don't care what they look for.
Right.
If you're sane – and trying to run a decent wrestling promotion, Daniel Bryan is so much better than Sheamus.
Well, the good thing
is...
And
I'm not talking about just because he does moves better, he came from a guy. He's just a better character. Like, he's coming into his own, too. It seems like the promotion... Here's what pisses me off, okay? They bring a talented guy in. They don't like him.
Right.
Okay? Then they give him kind of a role that, they kind of let him toil around. Then they give him their role. He does well with it, and then they beat him.
Right. No, that's absolutely true. The other thing is, too, we talked about this with WrestleMania 11, how it is very iffy when you have the large babyface in there with the small heel and trying to get enough heat. Now, Daniel Bryan, unlike Shawn Michaels, Daniel Bryan is being pushed as kind of a submission machine. He can get stuff on you out of nowhere. And Daniel Bryan, I'm sure, is going to be on offense a lot more than Shawn Michaels was in that match. But there is going to be that kind of a dynamic. Plus, Sheamus has gotten most of the heat in the feud. I mean, run into the ring, put a slam or a kick or something like that on Daniel Bryan, leave. I almost think they're building to the same thing here. If the underestimated Daniel Bryan comes through again, I really hope you're right about that. He needs this. And supposedly insiders are saying these days, supposedly, that I guess Vince's opinion, if you read the dirt sheets, is improving on Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, yeah. So that's always good news. I think both champions need to retain.
I do, too. And that would be one of the only times, I think, if that happened.
Yeah.
The match where you know it's going to be a title change based on all of the heat. I don't even remember how this stupid feud started. Cody Rhodes, the Intercontinental Champion, against the Big Show.
I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
I don't care that it makes no sense. Cody Rhodes should go over.
Yeah, but that's the problem. You know he won't. And it's a thing where Cody Rhodes has had, I think, a very good run as Intercontinental Champion. He needs to lose it to somebody where it's going to make a difference.
Yeah, the Big
Elevating
Show.
Elevating the Big Show one more time?
The Big Show's done, man. I don't know why he's employed.
I mean, I'm
sorry. I know he's big.
Right.
But, man, he's been just mired in mediocrity for so long.
Right.
He's not a special. The specialness is worn off.
Right.
I don't care about it. When I see the Big Show, I'm kind of like, God, you're still around.
Yeah.
You know?
You're a guy who said that about Kane also, and he's still around.
Yeah, he's worse.
Before we go to the control of both shows match and just touch on that briefly, we'll touch on even more briefly the designated celebrity for this year, which, again, assuming that The Rock isn't filling that role in the main event as a movie star instead of a wrestler, Maria Menounos is in there with Kelly Kelly against Beth Phoenix and Eve Torres. Say this anyways, Maria is somebody that is a big fan, that respects the business. Like Snooki, I expect her to give a good effort like last year. Could really be an exposing the business kind of a thing. And Beth Phoenix and Eve Torres right now are both two very good heels who heels don't win matches like this.
Yeah, at least it's going to be short. Yeah, obviously the celebrity will win, I assume. So.
And that's, you know, that's not real good because Eve Torres is just starting to get heat as a heel at this point.
Yeah, they'll
Beth Phoenix
is
the women's champ.
Yeah, have Kelly beat Beth to set up an incredible
At least
rematch.
That, yeah. I mean, Kelly is as awful a worker as hot a woman, in which I...
That made sense.
It still makes more sense for her to go over. All right, and then the last match ever in the anthology for us to talk about, of the ones that haven't happened yet here on WrestleMania 28, this Team Teddy versus Team Johnny. As of present, I believe it's Santino Marella, the team captain, with R-Truth, Kofi Kingston, two jobbers of the stars right there, Zack Ryder and Great Khali against Team Johnny. David Otunga, the captain, with Mark Henry, Christian, Jack Swagger, Dolph Ziggler, and still to be announced.
I hate this. I've hated every step of this awful feud. It takes away from matches on the show. I don't care who wins. It should just be John Laurinaitis. I would just rather Vince McMahon just say, Teddy Long, you're gone. Like,
I
no one would care.
Like, you got to have, like, a multi-man schmoz on
like,
there.
Why not
I
just do Money in the Bank?
I would agree with that, but they still want to do it as a separate pay-per-view later in the year, and they're already beating it into the ground. But maybe the compromise could be Money in the Bank, but the one you do later in the year has only got one briefcase. Maybe that's how you do it. Two briefcases, two Money in the Bank shows on a card is excessive. But
I agree.
So this is what we got for this year. So
Rock Cena, who's Cena's going to win?
It's
right?
Got to be. It's got to be because
does he
not,
win as a babyface?
He wins as a quote-unquote babyface, same as he beat Triple H at WrestleMania 22.
They just pretend everyone loves him?
They'll zoom in on the 100 fans at Sun
God,
Life Stadium.
I just, that's so bizarre, the way they treat it.
And, for all the Cena sucks chants, they'll be piping in on the stadium speakers, let's go Cena, to try to balance it out and try to make it look like it's a 50-50 crowd here tonight, folks.
They've done a pretty good job in this feud. I'll say Cena's come across well.
Such that I've even asked you off air if you thought The Rock was deliberately dogging it to allow Cena to catch up. You
no,
didn't think
I,
so.
I think they're actually it's the promotions trying every backhanded trick they can.
Well, it's working because, again, while it's not going to be anywhere near a 50-50 crowd, they're doing a better job of getting it to be palatable having Cena go over, which is going to be the case. My expectation, again, your favorite one of this era in the ninth mini episode that we've done here.
26.
The is 26. Mine's 24. Do you think this
24 would be the second best.
Okay. Do you think this card has a decent chance to be mentioned in the same breath with those two? Is that your expectation? Because honestly, that's how I go into it these years. I go into it like they've got a template for real success here. The work rate should be very good in most, if not all, matches. If they don't reach that standard, I'm disappointed. That's how I look at it.
The thing is, it's been very the ones we've talked about on this one have been very consistent for the most part. Last year was a noticeable step down, 25, except for the Great Michaels Undertaker match.
So two of the last three have not been good.
They've been subpar, to say the least. And the one in between I thought was very good. I would say that if it's not at the level of a 23, 24, 26, that's disappointment.
Right.
It should definitely be better than 25 and 27.
Right.
Without question. I mean, if it's not noticeably better than that, that's a colossal failure.
Right.
A lot of it is going to depend on the booking.
Yep, and we'll see how it goes. And it's a real experiment on their part. They've never done this before. They've never set it up a full year in advance. On Rock
publicly
announced.
I mean, they've had matches on the books for a year, but they haven't announced it.
Exactly, and the theme songs for this year, apparently, Good Feeling by Flo Rida, Wild Ones by Flo Rida, and Cleveland's own Machine Gun Kelly featuring Esther Dean with Invincible. Your thoughts, Kyle Ross?
I remember that 2 weeks ago that Machine Gun Kelly was there.
Yeah.
And somebody, it was a Todd Martin, was like, Michael Cole says Machine Gun Kelly is named that way for his rapid lyrical flow. He says this in a way that only Michael Cole could. and he wasn't being complimentary. So I like that.
The only thing that could be better is Vince McMahon trying to sound cool by saying that. All right, so we've reached
try to teach Oscar how to rap once, reportedly.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That would be very interesting. All I can say is my hope is that the next time that a WrestleMania features a Cleveland area hip hop artist, that it's our good friend and associate Don Peterson.
Did that happen in a match?
What better way to leave it on than that?
Wow, this has been fun.
This has been.
I'm a little bushed right now.
I am.
Gassed.
We have reached the finish line here. We've compared this to Ken Burns and the history of baseball here. Your 9-part anthology, the history of WrestleMania, this will stand up beside Ken Burns or any work of history here, my friend. It has been a pleasure doing it with you. Very pleased to have the FDH Lounge as the venue for this. Thank you very much, my friend.
It would be an honor.
All right. Thank you, my friend.